you first conducted the Alabama Symphony Orchestra in September of 2014. What did you know about the orchestra at that time, and what did you know about Birmingham?
Well, regarding the orchestra, I knew that it existed. I knew that they had a very good reputation for doing modern works and adventurous programming. Aside from that, and a few friends, colleagues, conductors had been here, had a good time, had spoken well about the level of the orchestra. That's pretty much what I knew about the orchestra itself. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the about Birmingham. I just knew about it, about the town, about that is, one of the most important, if not the most important economically in the state of Alabama. I knew, of course, about the civil rights history here with Dr. King and, all the events that happened during those decades. So that's what I knew prior to me hearing about an invitation to come conduct. Yeah.
So what attracted you to this position?
Well, what attracted me first from a very general, broad perspective first, I was a conductor at a point where guest conducting, as much as I love it still, you get to the point where you want to go a little bit deeper in how to shape the sound of an ensemble. You want to program too, because when you're conducting, you're always negotiating so much to the point that sometimes you just want to get something just done your way as far as programming goes. I want this program to have this symphony. But usually the music director of that orchestra would take it. So that was one reason. Just I wanted an ensemble. And then once I was here and listened to this particular ensemble and dealt with their highly competent administration and their fantastic musicians, and also the Stevens, the Alice Stevens Center, I found very attractive as a place to perform and shape sounds and all that. So I just figured it was a very, very good team with a city that is up and coming, vibrant, felt like there's something going on here, and I definitely wanted to be a part of it.
Can you give me an example when you said going deeper? Like, what are you talking about?
Well, usually when you're dealing with an ensemble, you have a certain number of rehearsals, and you're under the clock. And under the clock, you want to get something done. You want everything to be nice and tuned. You work to being very, very efficient time-wise, so you can get the best optimal result by the time of the first performance. When I say going deeper, it also means that some of the things that I like to talk about artistically, philosophically, or as far as programming, whatever, just the brand of the ensemble and of the art form. When you have 1 week per year with an ensemble, there's only so much you can do. When you have a bunch of weeks, so 8, 9, 13 or something, conducting, but also the being in the community, getting to know the people, getting to know the ensemble, its potentials, the taste of the individuals, all of that. And also, of course, getting deeper into the score, for example, like how to really understand Beethoven, or how to really understand, Aaron Copland or whoever we're dealing with. That's what I mean about going deeper. It's just having more time to develop a certain sound, a different certain philosophy, a certain way of programming, a certain way of approaching the audience.
What do you see as the biggest opportunity ahead for the Alabama Symphony Orchestra?
Well, my greatest opportunity, most definitely, I think is as cliche as it might sound, is just providing great, great concerts for an up-and-coming city, a city that has great history, but it is also, transforming itself. This generation I think the city itself is growing and changing, and to be a part of that, to be the musical reference of this change and all this progress, I think that's a great opportunity that we should all take part of.
You wrote on your website that you felt a great connection between you and the Alabama Symphony musicians. Could you describe what that musical connection felt like?
Yes, definitely. I really liked that this symphony seems to have a good mix of generations of musicians. So there's very good young, fresh musicians that are just fresh out of universities or you know, smaller regional orchestras that have just entered this ensemble. But there are also some really fine, well-seasoned musicians and all the in-between. And that, I'm a very curious person, and I like to deal on all those levels. I found it very great to, very interesting to deal with musicians that have been doing it for decades. And you know, when you talk to a fine seasoned musician like that, it's really interesting to see their perspective. You know, they've kind of seen it all, but in this orchestra, I was really I found it to be a very positive point to this orchestra that they, as much as they've done it all, they're still bringing the highest level of performance, you know, to rehearsals and of course to the concerts, and with the younger musicians, I felt this a great deal of kind of shared curiosity and common goals and how we want to shape things and, you know, our art form. Where do we want to take it? That is perhaps sometimes beyond the main concert hall, Alice Stephen, our home. But we also want to go to other places and catch new audiences in different formats, etc. Yeah.
The Alice Stephen Center has seating in the choral balcony, so audience members who opt to sit there will be able to see you from the front. What can they expect to see?
Well, hopefully they will not see me looking at them too much, because now that means I'm being distracted. But no, I was just kidding. I hope that what they see is, number one, a conductor that's delivering something that is true to the score. But, you know, to go a little bit beyond, I'm always hoping, whether people are in front of me, behind me, or wherever, I want the audience to feel the level of passion that we as performers feel for this fantastic body of works that ranges from, 500 years prior to up to date today. You know.
Do you keep a regular beat when you conduct?
Depending on the piece. Yeah, if I'm doing something like Steve Reich, the four sections, a piece like that, you definitely want to keep a beat. And sometimes it's about the automation and being able to keep the machine running smoothly. In other types of pieces, like late romantic period or, like a Brahms symphony, you actually want it to feel that has a steady pulse, but like in an organic setting, like our own heartbeat. You want it to be something that fluctuates with the emotion and with the timing and with just what's going on, even within a performance. So then I am not so angular and automatic. I like to stretch it here, go forward there.
Will the Alabama Symphony Orchestra be your only full-time conducting job?
Well, definitely. For now, I think that's a pretty... pretty big job to have coming in. I'm definitely not looking for music directorship or anywhere else. I mean, I'm relocating my family to Birmingham. I'm definitely wanting to have strong bonds with other ensemble or opera companies. I like to do opera here and there once or twice every couple of years. And so I'm definitely always looking to have strong bonds with other ensembles, but my main attention will definitely be here in Birmingham with the Alabama Symphony Orchestra.
At age 3, you were enrolled in Venezuela's renowned public system of youth orchestras known as El Sistema. Describe for me what that gave you.
That was a very early start, which is, I think, something that is good for any musician to have a early goal with the art form. I'm not necessarily a product of El Sistema, but I grew up, I was there for 3-4 years before I was put in another school, another well-known school in Venezuela, Elmi Friedman Conservatory. But growing up there with my father also as a conductor who worked in El Sistema, I mean, it's kind of a, it's almost like a family thing. Everybody knows everybody. There's a definitely a rich musical culture in Venezuela and in Caracas, where I grew up. And it's just something that's always been there. I didn't realize that it was different until I left Venezuela when I was 14. And then I saw other perspectives. But for me, it's not just being in El Sistema. It was being the son of a conductor, where I grew up backstage of either a ballet production or an opera or a symphonic concert or choral concerts as well. I grew up in the choral world. So that's what growing up for me was in Venezuela.
Yeah, your background is the cello. And in fact, you're principal cellist of the Venezuelan Symphony Orchestra. So what made you want to be a conductor?
Well, I've kind of given away a little bit of my dad being a conductor is just made it something, not necessarily that I wanted to follow him, or like many people might want to. For me, I mean, I was actually more of a rebel in that sense, but just knowing that that was a possibility. I mean, when I decided that I wanted to be a musician and later on to conduct, it didn't feel like I was breaking, some kind of boundary. I didn't have this resistance. I've always been very supportive. For as far as conducting goes, that was actually a very organic process. When I decided that I wanted to be a musician, I was not automatic in deciding that I wanted to be a conductor. I wanted to be a fine cellist. My main interest early on was chamber music, and I played many years in a string quartet and different string quartets, and I studied with definitely some of the best quartets out there. And that was my first initial, let's call it, real passion within the art form. But meanwhile, while I was studying, I had, having a father who's a conductor and who also happens to be very academic and a really good teacher of the art form. I grew up, listening and watching all the videos of Furtwängler or Toscanini or Knappertbusch or Schellibidache, you name the conductor. I've watched all the videos growing up with my father. And then at some point when I was 19, I studied the form more in depth and then started conducting. And I kind of shelved it for a little bit. I was not conducting for a few years, and it wasn't until I went back to Venezuela that I started to conduct again. And it was, again, a thing of accident. A board member of the Venezuela Symphony, where I was, like you say, principal cellist, but I still hadn't won that job. I was still in the section of the cellos. Somebody walked up to me and said, "Is it true that you know how to conduct?" And I said, "Yes." A little bit surprised that they knew, because I really had made no promotion about this aspect. And then they told me, "Well, we have a educational concert. We need somebody to conduct it. Well, would you be willing to do it?" "Yes, of course." "Okay, so here's this course. It's tomorrow." I said, "Oh my God, yeah." So it was a little bit pressure there, but just I did ask for a small rehearsal so we could at least run the thing from top to bottom. And that little rehearsal did a lot for me, at least, because I it felt right. I mean, I don't know, being in front of this of a big symphony orchestra, and their reaction towards me was definitely very positive. And that's when I started the curious side project that I had became something more substantial. I had also covered much ground as a cellist that I wanted to. I played as a soloist. I was a principal of an orchestra later on. Then I was also, I'd been in a string quartet and played many of the fine pieces out there. And it just felt right that now I could maybe tell others and colleagues and lead them in how to approach a score. And that's how it all evolved from there. And then opera and then everything came very organically.
So what makes a good conductor?
Very good question. I think being a great conductor in one ways, like any leadership position, it's having the right mix of people skills, of professional skills for whatever the trade is, and also being able to relate that to the community. every community, every institution has its own little tricks and, you know, and its own characteristics that a leader has to analyze and see how, what's my place here, how do I make this relevant, etc. There's also then musically speaking, you know, being curious and having very high aspirations and trying to present as much as possible of the great repertoire that is out there. I mean, we have a body of music that is centuries long. So many great works by so many people. So being somebody that is curious and is able to deliver on the idea and the excitement of music, I think that makes a great conductor. And then, after all, the main thing is being able to deliver a fine concert with, you know, very precise technique, good rehearsal approach with the ensemble, and being able to dig in deeply into the score. That's really, I mean, if you're doing something vocal, you go in with the language and you try to make sure what, you know, what the words mean and translate that into the music, and, you know, knowing as much as possible about each instrument. Playing in an orchestra, I think, it's also that also helps eventually.
You told WQXR, the classical radio station in New York, that you were arrested and tortured in your native Venezuela for simply watching an anti-Hugo Chavez protest. It seems reasonable to say that that effect had an effect on you personally. I'm wondering how, if at all, it affected your music.
Most definitely. And thanks for bringing that out. That it, when those events took place, that was supposed to be my first big symphonic concert with the Venezuela Symphony. We were scheduled to do, it was like a subscription program. It was my very first one. So when this happened, you can imagine that I was on a superficial level, very frustrated. Your energy, my energy definitely was so focused on this concert and this, and then that gets completely shattered by the military forces, and then you go through, you know, as you can imagine, I went through a little bit of a dark period of figuring out, you know, things about the world and, you know, violence, human rights, etc. Physically as well, you know, I had to do some rehab. I mean, going through all the different, you know, whatever, therapies and, you know, shrinks and psychologists, and then physical therapies as well. Nothing was even close, remotely to being as effective as music was for me to get back, you know, back to a certain normality. And then also I felt that my musicianship was definitely affected by it. It's just I really don't take anything for granted. I mean, I'm not sure that I'm consciously thinking this every second, but I definitely feel a sense of, wow, I mean, it's amazing when you've seen what people can do on the negative side. You can also really appreciate much more what when you see a whole orchestra, a whole opera company, or just the arts in general, doing what they're really meant to do, is to tell profound stories and also to heighten the senses of everybody who's present. These events from 2004 definitely put me in a position to have very good lens or perspective of what matters in the arts, why they're important. You know, just bringing people together, community, inspiring, and of course, channeling this great amount of energy that we all have that can be misused or it can be used for something constructive, creative.
What's the one thing you think people should know about the Alabama Symphony Orchestra that perhaps doesn't get mentioned more often?
One thing is that it's a gem of an ensemble. And people in Birmingham and coming to Birmingham just for visit, or people from Birmingham, I think would be very pleasantly surprised if they haven't seen this ensemble already. I think that is definitely, they're one of the gems of this wonderful city.